The Daily Connect podcast, the voice of the RNIB Connect community.
A very warm welcome to the Daily Connect podcast. You are listening to Chris Wallace, and what a show we have in store for you. In our sports section today, we'll be finding out how Dan Roach got on during the Blind Drive Challenge for RNIB Cymru volunteers. And there's a new book as part of our World Connect series, where we'll be chatting to Italian blind author Paolo Peretti about her book, The Distance Between Me and the Cherry Tree. There will be more of your views from the past week as Robbie Robertson joins me in the studio. And in our Pause for Thought series, we hear about guide dog Wheeler and his friend Martin.
The Daily Connect podcast.
But first of all, on the Daily Connect, next month across the UK, supporters of RNIB will take a big leap of faith. On Sunday, September the 23rd, they'll be diving out of an aeroplane in a parachute jump designed to raise money for the RNIB charity through sponsorship. Blind adventurer Luke Holworth has been telling Alan Russell all about it.
I haven't really thought about it, to be honest. I've kind of put it to the back of my mind, but yeah, as the week's creeping, yeah, it is getting a bit more, oh, what's going to happen, oh, what's it going to be like?
Now, RNIB are asking people to take part in the big jump across the UK on the same day. It's all about helping raise awareness and raise funds, but why did you pick this particular one, Luke?
Well, somebody actually from the RNIB emailed me all the different events that you do over the year, and there was a few in there that took my fancy, the Great Wall of China, but I thought that was a bit too much considering I don't do any exercise whatsoever, so I thought, no, that might just be a bit too much. So this was the one that appealed to me, just because I'm a bit of an adrenaline junkie as well.
It's definitely one to try then, as you say, you know, Great Wall of China, yeah, lots of walking, parachute jump, you're just going to fall out the plane. Really,
exactly, it's the ideal for the laser. Like, you can just literally just fall and there's no problem. And then another reason is to just show that visually impaired people, there are no barriers in life, because I'm a great believer in that just because you have a VI, it doesn't mean that there are any barriers.
Are you apprehensive at all about it, or are you looking forward to it?
I don't know. It actually ties in with my birthday weekend. So it's kind of turned into quite a big family event where we're all renting a house up at the lake. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it, spending time with family, and I'm looking forward to doing the jump as well, just because it's something new, and to see what it'll be like. You never know, I might be doing exactly the same thing again next year. I might like it that much.
Yeah, you might get the bug. You never
exactly.
know. You never know. Why RNIB then in particular? Did you receive help from them, or have you used their services in the past?
I have used the services, and I continue to use the services sometimes, because what I noticed at the RNIB is particularly good at signposting. When you're using the Sightline RNIB directory, you can just type in your postcode and it'll come in with the local organisations that are nearby. What did I ring up for the other day? The postage. I was a bit confused about the postage because I've been sending some stuff out for work, which were articles for the blind, and people haven't been receiving them, so I just rung up for clarification on what the actual policy was with that. So yeah, I've used the RNIB quite a lot.
Did you get any help from them when you lost your sight originally?
I weren't really in a place to get help. I was kind of fighting it initially about being blind, because it's denial. You go through that feeling. So initially I was just like, no, I don't need any help. I can deal with this. You know, I'll find an operation that will bring my sight back and all that. It was only after, when I thought I want to start looking at other societies and things like that, and things that are close, that, yeah, I did use them.
So they kind of helped you find support in your local area, kind of grassroots support, if you like.
Yeah, and I went to go and see the tech guy called Mark Healy at the time. Just made me realise that I can still use my iPad. Just got to use VoiceOver now instead of my sight. They helped a lot.
I suppose it's a bit like kind of giving a little bit back, isn't it, doing the parachute jump?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the RNIB is the biggest charity out there, so, you know, and they do help a lot of people, so it's just about all supporting each other and be able to do it. I actually volunteer for the RNIB now as well.
You're a busy man.
I know. I've got a job. I've got two jobs, actually, and I volunteer for the RNIB, and then I do jump out of a plane when time allows.
Yeah, when you've got a bit of space in your diary, you'll throw yourself out of a plane for RNIB. Look, pleasure speaking with you. We'll catch up with you again, and thanks for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks, Alan.
Luke Holworth talking there to Alan Russell. The big parachute jump for RNIB takes place on Sunday, September 23rd. If you want to sign up for it, go to the website rnib.org.uk.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
RNIB Connect Radio's Lynn Morgan has been paying a visit to a Cardiff man who's driving mad to raise money for RNIB Cymru volunteers.
Sports car fanatic and volunteer Dan Roach went to Hayford Park Airfield in Oxfordshire during July and took to the wheel of an Aston Martin DB9. Raising money for RNIB Cymru, I visited Dan at his home and began by asking him to tell me about his sight loss.
I got no sight now, and it's part of a very rare syndrome called Alstrom syndrome, genetic disorder. It was gradually went as I was born partially sighted, and I went blind about 9 or so. And then there's other symptoms with the syndrome. I've been volunteering with the CIB a good many years, about 20 now, but in the last couple of years, I've also doing RNIB, mainly doing research, getting a lot of data for them. And then now they're doing a bit of fundraising, but more now the last year since Kate's joined RNIB Cymru. On the 20th of July, I went to Upper Hayford Park, an old Air Force base, where I did a sponsored drive in an Aston Martin DB9 for the RNIB Cymru.
Have you ever driven before?
Yeah, I've driven little cars like Fiestas and Focus and Corsas. Last year I drove like a Caterham, which is an open-top car, like a sports car, kind of two-seater with two steering wheels and two sets of pedals. There's a special charity called Speed of Sight, and they built their own sort of cars. So not just blind people, any disabled person can have a go at driving a car. So they got like hoists and a buggy, and they've also got two like sports cars. They're all based on Caterham sports cars.
So when you went into that car, how did that work?
There was a driver, a sighted driver alongside me, which was my eyes. And we were on the track at Landau near in Cowbridge in Vale of Glamorgan. And we both had helmets on it, and both had two-way radios. And he would say like left, right, slow, brake, and...
So did you sort of push it a bit? It sounds as if that car would have had a bit of speed.
Yeah, about 50, 60, I reckon. But they didn't actually tell me because they didn't have any speedometer, no sort of visual things, because they had to keep everything lightweight. So it's just virtually the engine and two seats and a frame.
You like the speed then, do you?
Yeah, I love the speed.
Now then, let's go back to July then. You went specifically to drive this Aston Martin. Tell me how that happened.
Back in May... Kate and I went to a breakfast meeting at Sophia Gardens. Kate, she's a fundraising officer, and she's helped arrange it with my brother Ian, with Dave King from Aston Martin, their vice president. And we put a letter to him saying, you know, would you like to sponsor me? And we were doing this drive. So we decided then, oh, we may as well do it in the Aston Martin because it all ties up.
So is there any particular reason why the Aston Martin, Dan?
I do like Aston Martins, and around the corner used to be a dealership, so every now and again we walk past there and you could hear them like revving their engines and driving off. So yeah. I thought I'd love to have a drive of an Aston Martin.
So can you talk me through the day then? Because obviously you went, and I assume this Aston Martin was waiting for you. What happened then, Dan?
It wasn't just an Aston there. There was about 6 to 10 different supercars. Like a supercar, like a road car. They didn't even make you wear a helmet, just ordinary seat belts and leather seats. And I think they were electric because I put the seat belts on and the bloke did something and the seat went forward. So he kind of put my hands on the wheels and he said, you know, the position. And then he asked him if I'd driven before and kind of said, oh, just lift your feet off. And the car started rolling and then just said, start accelerating. And then I think he did a little bit to get me out of the pits. He said it was quite tight, so then when it's on the track, he's just saying, like, accelerate and then brake, and then go left or right, because there's a couple of bends. It was great. You could feel the control of the car, and the brakes are quite tough, but I got used to them, and then I thought it was going to be a lot faster than it was. You know, I probably just didn't accelerate as fast, because he said accelerate smoothly, which I was doing, and it wasn't going too fast. I thought it'd be a lot faster than it was.
Could you feel the speed?
Yeah, I could, but lots of people were, like, asking how far, but I forgot to ask that, because... It's like too involved with controlling the car.
So tell me then, was it an automatic car or did you have to change gears?
They're all automatic, and they do have like sort of paddles behind the steering wheel. So someone could operate the paddles, but they just left it in automatic because it's just enough like to deal with the brakes and the accelerator and the steering.
So explain to those who are listening, perhaps who've never driven, what's the difference between a car where you change gears and an automatic? You know, just give us your take on it, Dan.
Well, with a manual car, you have a clutch as well as the brake and accelerator, and then you have a gear stick where you change between 5 or 6 gears, usually 6 gears on a modern car these days. And then with an automatic, after you put it into drive, the car will automatically change between, say if it's got 6 gears, automatically change up every gear and down. But you can also, on a lot of the modern cars, either do it by paddles on the steering wheel, just sort of behind, one to go up the gears, one to come down. And also the one I drove, the Aston Martin, had buttons on the dashboards so they could put it into drive, park. There was no gear stick between these seats where you usually have it on a manual car. It's like a big box and all sorts of heater controls and things like that. Great experience. And
do you know how much you've raised so far?
I think it's £308 plus gift aid, which is about £75 on top, I think. I might do it again, but I might try something else next time, like 4x4 or something. Last year I did do some quad biking on a farm in Pontypridd area. The one day we were going to do it, it tipped down. So we left in a couple of days, and then it was the day we went, it was really, really sunny and hot. So It was nice and dry and not much mud left then. They started off as a sheep farmer, but they said they can't make any money from sheep farming. So now they run like weekends, like paintballing and laser quest type thing and quad biking. And they said, don't worry about your blindness. Come along. You can go on our quad bike. I had a one-to-one instructor with me. And to start with, he had a little bike, say 70 horsepower-ish. And he was walking next to the bike with a pull chain-like lead. Right. So if anything happened, he could just pull the lead and it would kill the power. And then after like 2 rounds around the field, it was this big field. So you couldn't really crash into anything except for the bloke. And then after that, he said, because he's quite an old farmer bloke and not very fit, so he said, don't go too fast. Then he got on a bike and he was just telling me, go left, right, around this field. So we just drive around the field on the quad bikes.
So have you always been a petrol head then, Dan?
Yeah, and since about the age of 3, my family and friends had come round to their cars and they always know that I wanted to go out for a drive with them, or especially if they got a new car, a different one. But I do like more of the supercars because of the speed and the sound they make. And I've been to a private test with McLaren, so it was arranged through, I think it's called the Starlight Foundation, which grant wishes to disabled or people with rare syndromes and things like that, and up to the age of 18, I think. And I managed to get a wish granted to go and visit McLaren at Silverstone. I met Mika Hakkinen there. He turned up, walked into the garage when we were there, got to touch all the car, and they took it apart, all the panels, so I could feel all the suspension and all that. And they gave me the steering wheel, which is like half a steering wheel with lots of buttons on it. Like, they were kind of saying what buttons do what. I think these days they have a lot more buttons on them, so probably worth a lot more. We were probably there for a few hours because part of the experience is they gave me a ride in a rally car, because you can't go in a Formula One car because they're only one-seaters. That was great because you got to go like off-road on all sort of gravel, and you had to get harnessed up with a 4-point harness, and he's like throwing it around the course.
I then asked Dan, would he like to hear a particular piece of music on the Welsh Connection? And he chose Phil Collins because, Dan said, he'd met the musician.
Yeah, I met him back in about 93 because I had a wish when I went to see McLaren at Silverstone. And then after that, I met Phil Collins at Wembley Arena because he invited me along as a guest. They phoned up and said, like, how many tickets do you want? And we also got to go backstage as well. He was very nice. He even sort of recognised, because I sent pictures up before and a letter, and he sort of said, hi, Dan, come along. And he sort of really friendly. And before, because we were catching the train back, the last train, he kind of told us what song to, he said, leave halfway through this song. You had to catch the train back from Paddington. Great fan, brilliant. Thank you.
seen your face before, my friend. But I don't know if you know who I am. Well, I was there and I saw what you did. I saw it with my own two eyes. So you couldn't wipe off that grin. I know where you've been. It's all been a pack of lies.
In the Air Tonight by Phil Collins, the choice of Dan Roach, volunteer and fundraiser for RNIB Cymru. If you would like to contribute, visit Dan's Just Giving page at justgiving.com/fundraising/drivingblind.
RNIB Connect Radio's Lynn Morgan talking there to Dan Roach. And if you like what you've heard from Lynn, well, she's coming up right now.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
As we've heard, RNIB Cymru have some fantastic volunteers. Celebrating Volunteers Week with a Tea and Strawberries Day, Lynn Morgan has been speaking to just a few of them.
To celebrate Volunteers Week, RNIB Cymru and Cardiff Institute for the Blind held a strawberries and cream tea at the Rita Penna allotments in Cardiff, where I caught up with a couple of volunteers.
Hi, my name is Zulfikar Ali. As volunteers with CIB, we've been invited to strawberries and cream and tea and coffee and a prize draw. I ring round and ask visually impaired people how they are. I do the yoga class on Wednesday and just pop in from time to time for the chat. Well, I have no sight in the left eye. Right eye is suffering with keratoconus and glaucoma. Severe dryness and an allergy issue. Quite a lot of things.
And so is your treatment ongoing then?
Yeah, at the Heath Hospital and at Moorfields in London.
Why do you volunteer then, Zulkfa?
I like helping people who have similar sort of conditions and general eyesight issues.
I'm John Newton. I live in Machen, near Caerphilly.
And how long have you been a volunteer, John?
Probably about 3 years.
And what form does your volunteering take?
I help with the VIP walking group. Richard Garman from the Cardiff Ramblers set up the group probably 10 to 15 years ago. And it was sponsored by the Cardiff Ramblers, and a number of the Cardiff Ramblers helped Richard with the coordination. I'm a member of the Cardiff Ramblers in addition to the Caerphilly Ramblers. And my cousin Paul Jenkins, who was an active member of the walking group, who died probably 4 or 5 years ago, he taught me a lot about it, besides what I'd heard about it. So when I retired, I thought it would be a nice idea to join the group and help out with leading walks and supporting whoever was leading.
And so how often do you go out?
Once a month. It varies between a Tuesday to a Thursday, so it varies month to month. There is a timetable, and there's several people who lead the walks, and they decide on the walk, and that's informed to Richard Garman, who coordinates with the Institute. And then people who are blind, they're able to come on the walk with dogs, and it's a different area to walk in.
How long on average are you out for then?
It's best part of a day. We would meet up about 9:30 from Cardiff, and the length of the walk could be 5 to 6 miles. People would need to make sure that they've got adequate walking shoes or walking boots, that they've got wet weather gear, need to take a rucksack. This time of year it's best to have a hat. Bring some food, pack lunch. One of the things the leader has to make sure is that they must have walked the route out first to know how easy it is and how difficult and what sort of issues. Sometimes trees may have come down, which would give sighted people issues. But of course, if you've got sight problems, then it's even more difficult. You try and make sure that the walk doesn't have too many stiles, if any. Kissing gates are better for people to go from one field to the other. And the walk leader must be able to talk a little bit about the walk, interesting points, and make sure really they get on with all the people on in the party, in the group.
And how about guiding somebody on a walk like that? Can you describe to me what form that takes?
It's one of the things that even after a few years I'm still learning. It's not a straightforward thing that if you're the one supporting the person with the sight issues, they're comfortable with how you're supporting them. I can remember on a walk I was leading in the Caerphilly area last autumn, I was describing the vegetation, the trees and so on either side of the path we were walking on to the lady with me, who was mid-20s, and I was describing ferns. I said, oh, there's lots of ferns over there. Now, I suddenly thought, how do you describe a fern to someone who's blind? And she'd been blind since the age of one. And I obviously was putting myself on the spot. So what I did was I picked up a bit of the fern and I let her hold it. And she said, I know what you mean now. I think she was grateful I was doing that sort of thing and describing things. I think if you were one of the walkers, you do like to hear a little bit about the countryside. Sometimes it brings back memories before you'd lost some of your sight. You like hearing about the different sorts of birds, the trees, the local history and so on. But at the same time, you don't want to, if you're the person doing the talking, you don't want to be a bore. So you've got to pitch it as right as you can. Another thing I find you have to be mindful of is if you're a sighted rambler, stopping for what we call a comfort break isn't so much a problem. You find bushes and you tell people, but certainly this is more of a source of anxiety if you've got sight problems. So we do try and find toilets where we can for people. I probably could talk length, but certainly I enjoy it very much. And the pleasure people get from being in the countryside is fantastic. We would love even more people to come out with us. So if they contact the Institute and find about the walks, I'm sure most people could do them. There's people with just some eyesight problems to some people who are totally blind. They can bring your guide dog, and I'm sure everyone would enjoy coming out. And it's certainly a change from sitting in the house and doing all the other things that you would normally do.
Volunteers Zulkfa Ali and John Newton at the Rhyd y Penna allotments in Cardiff. If you're interested in volunteering, then visit the website rnib.org.uk/volunteering for information and opportunities offered by RNIB.
If you want to hear more from Lynn Morgan and more about what blind and partially sighted people in Wales are up to, then take a listen to the Welsh Connection on RNIB Connect Radio Wednesdays at 6 p.m. and Saturdays at 4.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
As part of our continuing World Connect series, Red Cell has been chatting to Italian blind author Paola Peretti about her book The Distance Between Me and the Cherry Tree, a story inspired by her own sight loss journey.
This week sees the publication of a book for children that is already being hailed as a modern classic. The Distance Between Me and the Cherry Tree by Paola Peretti tells the story of 9-year-old Mafalda, who knows that she will lose her sight completely within the next 6 months. Can she find a way through a seemingly dark future and still go to school, play football, and look after her beloved cat? With the help of her family and friends, Mafalda needs to discover the things that will be important to her once her sight has gone. The book was inspired by the author's own story. Paola Peretti learnt that she had Stargardt's disease 15 years ago, and she, like Mafalda, lives in Italy. But she was in London for the book's UK publication, and to visit the RNIB studios where the English language version of the audiobook was being recorded.
All children are scared of the dark. The dark is a room with no door and no windows, where monsters grab you and eat you without making a sound. I'm not afraid of the dark, though. But I have something else to worry about. I have my very own dark, the one in my eyes. I'm not making it up. If I were, Mum wouldn't buy me pastries shaped like peaches filled with cream, and she wouldn't let me eat them before dinner. If everything were okay, Dad wouldn't hide in the bathroom when the landlady phones, because it's always bad news when she rings.
Rosie Ackerman narrating The Distance Between Me and the Cherry Tree by my guest, Paola Peretti. Paola Peretti, welcome to Read On.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
The book is published this week, and I've been lucky enough to read it already. But for listeners who haven't, could you take us into the world of Mafalda?
Mafalda is a 9-year-old girl who finds out that she suffers from a serious disease. She is losing her sight. And in 6 months, she will go in blind. So she starts having a list of what she can do and what she can't do anymore.
And the book is very much about her coming to terms with what she's losing and trying to see what is essential.
Yeah, is in this way, yeah. I think she will find what is essential for her only through a process along all the book. And at the end, maybe she will find it.
Storytelling is also very important. The books that help her are The Little Prince and also a book called The Baron in the Trees.
The Baron in the Trees is her father's favourite book. And the story of Mafalda is also based on this real novel written by Italo Calvino, an Italian writer. There's also The Little Prince. I think it's a book that we can read at all ages.
And I felt very much the same about your book. The Distance Between Me and the Cherry Tree is a book for children, but it's also a book for adults. It's about learning to live with loss and becoming independent of the grief that you suffer with loss.
Oh, thank you for this question. Yes, it's a book about losing something and gaining something else. strength. I think that Mafalda is finding her identity through this losing. So I think so.
And it's also she finds her identity, but not necessarily with the help of her parents. It's more, or her school, it's more the help from unexpected places, the Romanian caretaker at the school and the bad boy at the school.
Yes. The parents are worried and scared about her future, and I think she tries to protect them. Estella and Filippo, the bad boy, are marginalized people, and I really liked this kind of person of people because they are very, I think they are very sensitive and creative when you get close to them.
And they also speak the truth. The truth might not always be pleasant, but Mafalda has to realise that she will be blind and that she will have to have independence in a very different way. And it's only when Filippo or Estella points that out to her that she comes to terms with it. Her parents are scared, so they almost sidestep the issue.
Yeah, I think that saying the truth is very, very important. Maybe it's not easy to accept, but this is the real life, so Mafalda has to accept it. And in this way, she can start finding another way of thinking, an alternative way of thinking about everything. Only in this way, I think, she can find her instruments, alternative instruments, to do what she wanted to do.
"Don't worry," Mum says when she does the dishes after dinner. "Go and play in your room, and don't worry about a thing." I hesitate in the kitchen doorway, trying with the power of my mind to make her turn around, but it never works. So here I am in my room, cuddling Ottimo Tukuret, my brown and grey cat with a kink at the end of his tail. He doesn't mind being lifted, rolled over on the carpet or chased with the toilet brush. He's a cat, Dad says, and cats are opportunists. I suppose that means they like attention.
The book is very realistic. It's clearly informed by your own experience of losing your sight, but it's also got some rather magical realism. Do you like mixing the imagination of magical realism with a real story?
Oh, yeah, I really like doing it, yes. I usually do it in my life. And I think that the tree is the perfect metaphor in this sense, because it's a real thing, but it represents also a place of imagination, of fantasy for Mafalda. Mafalda is, in part, is fiction, but in part is a piece of my story.
Has your own Stargardt disease made you into a writer, do you think?
I've ever wanted to be a writer, and to become a writer as a work. So the disease didn't bring me to this work, but the disease helped me to write the book. And I think it's been a therapy to me, writing this book. And it's been also a process to acceptation of the pathology.
Yes, I read a wonderful quote. "I want to write, I can't wait any longer. When I write, I have eyes inside my hands that make me see better inside my head," which I thought was a lovely way of expressing what your blindness has done for you as far as your creativity.
Oh, thank you. I think so. hands are very important to me. Yeah, I'm a writer. I really like the image of having eyes in my hand.
How do you write? Do you type or do you dictate your book?
I type. I've been a journalist, so that work taught to me writing in a very clicky way without looking at the keyboard. It's been very useful. I have a program of magnifying for and I also use a program of reading for verify my dialogue.
Yeah, a sort of text to speech.
Yes.
I use that as well, and actually I find that helps me not write long and boring sentences. It keeps my writing quite tight.
Yeah. Yes, it's useful.
And are you working on another book at the moment?
Yes, I'm working on my second book, and it will be about another boy, a bit older than Mafalda. He is a gypsy boy who is fighting between be a stable boy with an apartment and a family in a house, or being a gypsy. He was very happy when he was a gypsy.
Clearly, reading is also very important to you. And we've mentioned The Little Prince, which is the first Braille book that Mafalda receives. And her father's favourite book, The Baron in the Trees, is the first audio book that she listens to. Do you use both Braille and audio books to read?
I've never tried reading with Braille, but I will. sometimes I listen to audiobooks, but I prefer using my e-book with a very big font. Now I prefer it.
Have you heard the English language version of your audiobook that was recorded here?
Yeah, I listened to a piece of that version. It was wonderful, I think. Yeah.
So you must be very pleased with the translation that Denise, the translator, has done.
Denise has been a very sensitive translator, and I think she used her to read my book to her daughter. So the translation, it's been perfect for children, I think.
Paola Peretti, thank you so much for being a guest on Read On, and best of luck with what I am sure will be a very long writing career.
Oh, thank you for all. Thank you for all.
For me, it's enough that he's around when things are going wrong, and I need someone warm and cuddly to hug. Like now. I know something's wrong. I might only be in year 5, but I notice everything. My cousin's girlfriend says I have a third eye. She's Indian and has a dot painted in the middle of her forehead. I like that she thinks I have an extra eye, although it would be better if the two eyes I already have actually worked. Sometimes I feel like crying, like now. My glasses steam up when I'm about to cry. I take them off, so at least they can dry and the red mark on my nose will go away.
The Distance Between Me and the Cherry Tree is out this week in paperback, ebook, and audio. And thanks to the publishers Hotkey Press, it simultaneously entered the RNIB library in a full range of accessible formats, including as TB24549.
If you'd like to read The Distance Between Me and the Cherry Tree, you can get the translation right now in the RNIB Talking Books Library. And you can hear Read On every Friday at 1 p.m. and repeated Sundays at 3 or Mondays at 6 p.m. on RNIB Connect Radio.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
This year marks RNIB's 150th anniversary. To celebrate, we've been asking the blind and partially sighted community for their stories and experiences of sight loss. We'll be sharing these stories over the coming months to document the changes we've seen in the last 150 years. Today, it's the story of Christopher Perkin, who says, "About 17 and a half years ago, I bought a Braille Light note taker from the RNIB. At the time, I was attending language classes at my local technical college, and I was now able to independently type in the correct accented letters while preparing my work assignments. Though I've recently bought a tablet and smartphone, I still play computer games on my Braille Light, as well as using it to take notes and as a calculator. This is especially so when I need to write down something quickly, as it can be turned on and ready to go almost immediately. I look forward to reading about more exciting technological developments." If you're interested in sharing your story, please complete the submission form at www.rnib.org.uk/150stories.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio, and it's now time for your views. And back by popular demand here on the Daily Connect, it's Robbie Robertson from RNIB's Transcription Centre. How are you doing, Robbie?
I'm good, Chris. Thanks.
Thanks very much for coming back on to do your views. You must have enjoyed it last time.
It was, yeah. I've decided to rejoin you.
See, I think what happened, Robbie, is that we got a very complimentary social media message about the transcription service, and you thought, I just have to come back on and lap up the glory.
This needs to be acknowledged, yeah.
Before we get there, though, first of all, what's some of the general views that people have had this week on the Daily Connect?
Well, we got a very nice email from Carol Eden. She said, "Hello, friends. Last Thursday morning, I tuned in to RNIB Connect Radio, mainly because I knew that my precious friend Sheila Armstrong would be on air contributing to a programme. Didn't she do well? I found the whole programme very interesting, enjoyable and informative, so I kept listening for most of the day to keep me entertained whilst doing all those monotonous but necessary household tasks that are often left on the back burner. It was a happy day of discovery for me. I am definitely a big fan now. I love the well-balanced mix of news, information, stories and interviews, with plenty of great music and lots of fun too. Congratulations. Having been blind all my life, I thought that a radio station focused on sight loss would be rather boring. I couldn't have been more wrong." From Carol Eden. "P.S. I live in Patchway, South Gloucestershire, with my fourth guide dog, Wilson. I will be 74 next month, but thankfully not falling to bits yet."
Brilliant. Now, I can tell you for a fact that I know that Carol has been listening, so it must have really worked for her that first day of listening to RNIB Connect Radio, because, spoilers, she has more views. We're not going to get to them because they're about something that we covered this week on the Daily Connect. So we're going to get more from Carol next week on your views. But thanks so much for getting in touch. Okay, Robbie. Now, you were a special guest, as we mentioned, on your views last week. We talked a little bit about the transcription service and all the brilliant work you do for RNIB. And someone wanted to show their appreciation.
Yeah, we had Ryan McGrenican get back in touch via Facebook just to say, "Love your transcription book service." It's a very short message, but it's very nice to hear.
Very appreciated. I used to work in the transcription service myself, and I know, much like Robbie, that we did used to get some fantastic letters, emails, things of appreciation and support. Are they still coming in thick and fast?
We do, yeah, and we get returning customers as well who are always very quick to mention how happy they are with the service. So it's always nice to hear that.
Absolutely. One more time, Robbie, before I let you go and before we get into the last of our views, just let us know the best way if someone has something they want transcribed or any inquiries about the RNIB transcription service. What's the best way to get in touch with you?
If you want to get in touch for audio, braille, large print, electronic text, tactile diagrams and accessible sheet music, you can contact Ivybridge Transcription at rnib.org.uk or call them on 01752 690092. If you're based in Wales or require Welsh transcription, you can contact Cardiff Transcription at rnib.org.uk or call 029 2082 8540. And if you're based in Scotland or require Gaelic transcription, email me at robbie.robertson@rnib.org.uk or call me on 0141 648 8473.
Excellent. Thanks very much, Robbie. So our final view from the last week of the Daily Connect was about the forum. Now, this was a rather divisive subject. I spoke to Georgie Morell, who's a stand-up comedian, and RNIB Connect Radio's own Simon Pauly. This was concerning a joke that the RNIB published on National Tell a Joke Day, and after a series of complaints, they formally removed the joke with an apology and an explanation. Now, our guests last week, Simon and Georgie, neither of them felt that the RNIB should have done that, that they should have removed the joke or that they had any need at all to apologise for it, but we had a different view on the forum this week.
We did. Evie May got in touch on Facebook and said, "I think they were right to delete the tweet. While many of us had a chuckle at it, RNIB is a charity supporting people with all stages of sight loss, and not everyone will see the funny side while coming to terms with their loss of vision."
Absolutely. And this is a debate that will continue, and we plan on continuing it here on the Daily Connect. If you have any views about this or anything that we cover on the show, do get in touch with us. You can email radio@rnib.org.uk, or you can get in touch via our fully accessible website, rnibconnectradio.co.uk. You can even get in touch via social media channels. It's @RNIB on Twitter, or search RNIB Connect Radio on Facebook. Robbie Robertson from the RNIB Transcription Centre, thank you for joining me once more on the Daily Connect.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome anytime, sir.
The Daily Connect podcast.
It's time for one of our favourite parts of the show, Pause for Thought. And today in the series, we are going to hear from Martin, who introduces us to his guide dog, Wheeler.
After many years of saying I would never have a dog, I always believed I'd got too much residual sight. I got knocked down by a cyclist in Warwick. He was riding the wrong way up a one-way street, so obviously I hadn't looked for him. And that sort of knocked my confidence. And also at the time, we had a puppy in training in the office. I worked for Warwickshire County Council. And part of what they did was they brought some dogs into Warwickshire County Council to give people the experience of being led by a dog. But as a visually impaired person, I couldn't pass up that opportunity. And so after having a go and feeling what it's like to be led by a dog, it really sort of was a bit of a no-brainer that I see about applying for one. And I was very, very lucky because I got accepted and I got Wheeler very quickly. He's a beautiful dog. I'm very lucky to have him. We bonded very quickly. He's very affectionate and he does a good job. In September last year, when I was in Derby with some friends, we were having a bit of a school reunion, and myself and three other people, one of whom is also a guide dog user, we were refused service in a restaurant. The proprietor was very rude. He just kept saying, "We don't know, no dogs, no dogs," and then he asked us to leave because he had customers waiting to serve. I felt very angry and hurt and discriminated against. I mean, I know the law. I've been an equality officer. I know what the Act says, and I know my rights. And I felt hurt and angry. We reported them to the Equality Commission, and then I put it on the Derby Telegraph Facebook page because I thought that people needed to know, and I named and shamed the restaurant, obviously. The post on the Derby Telegraph website was shared several hundred times. I had lots and lots of positive comments, people saying that it was disgusting, and the number of people who said they weren't going to use that restaurant again was very high. The BBC got involved, the film crew came down to Warwick, where I live, and filmed Wheeler and I in a local cafe, and But unfortunately, when the BBC approached the restaurant, he lied and said that the restaurant had been full and that's why we were turned away. Nothing came of it other than I think he lost quite a lot of custom. Just to counterpoint that, an Indian restaurant round the corner from me the first time I went in, he said no dogs. I explained he was a guide dog and now he makes us very welcome.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
And that's it for another edition of the Daily Connect podcast. Don't forget, the Daily Connect is your views and your voice on RNIB Connect Radio. So why not join the conversation? You can email us radio@rnib.org.uk or give us a call on 0345 602 0025. You can also get in touch with us via our social media channels. Just search for RNIB Connect Radio on Facebook for the latest news from the blind and partially sighted community, and follow us on Twitter at RNIB Radio. I'll be back with you tomorrow with another brand new Daily Connect podcast just after 5 p.m. Thanks for listening.
The Daily Connect podcast.